Sportsnet today. Listen on the air, online, on the Sportsnet app, and always on your smart speaker. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right, happy Monday. Welcome to another hour of Sportsnet today. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you. We're talking lots of hockey this hour. Also got a Flames talk that is coming at you on this Monday, June 5th as well. Sportsnet today, wherever you get your podcasts. We're one game into the Stanley Cup Final. We'll dive into that quite a bit. And some of what we heard from Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, over the weekend in their State of the League address, all coming up this hour on Sportsnet today. Hi, Wes. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, buddy. How are you today?
Doing all right. Hanging in.
Good.
We saw the Vegas Golden Knights. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
It'd be a nice day for your backyard pool today.
Oh, yeah. This guy with his backyard pool. I don't even remember. I have a deck. I've got a deck that's about, I don't know, 6 square meters. probably smaller than that.
Sounds palatial.
Yeah. No room for a pool. It does have a fire table, but no room for a pool.
You know what? Fire table. That's a clutch addition.
We're going to talk a lot about the Vegas Golden Knights this segment and the first half of this hour. A little bit later on, we're going to talk to a gentleman with real intimate knowledge of one of the stories of the postseason, and that is former Calgary Canuck Aiden Hill and the way that he has burst onto the scene and what we've seen from him since taking over from Laurent Brossoit in the second round of the playoffs when Brossoit was at game three.
Game three against the Oilers, yeah.
And ever since, it's been Aiden Hill. And while it didn't necessarily start in the most incredible fashion, it sure has taken on a really, really good form. He's a former Canuck. He's a former Blackfoot minor hockey guy. And here he is, three wins away from backstopping the Vegas Golden Knights to a Stanley Cup. So looking forward to that in about 10 minutes' time.
And let me jump in on that really quick, because I'm excited to talk to Justin. Justin Cardinal's going to join us to chat about Aiden. I got thinking about this the other day, and it's been such a neat run for Calgarians in the sense of, you know, if you think back to a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, we're watching Braden Point, who is a made in Calgary story, play a starring role in the Stanley Cup Final. If you look to last year, we're watching Cale Makar play a starring role, ended up with a trophy as proof of it, the Conn Smythe winner. And now we're watching Aiden Hill, who's another guy, you're going to see Comox, BC listed as his birthplace, but he moved to Calgary when he was 3 years old. This is another product of Calgary minor hockey, a brief stint in Okotoks minor hockey. And I just think it's so neat. Now, basically 4 years in a row, we've watched a Calgary kid play a massive role in the biggest series of the season.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
It's a real testament to where Calgary minor hockey has grown and been more and more. You're like, oh, that's an elite prospect coming from Calgary minor hockey. It's neat to see. And it's funny, you know, I'll just give quick thoughts on game one. Cause I thought it was an entertaining game. I know it ends up being 5-2 Vegas, but it could very well have been 3-2 Florida. It was that close a hockey game. And I thought it was a really, really fun game to watch. And the atmosphere was great. And the atmosphere will be awesome again tonight, Monday night, for game two. And when they head back to Florida for games three and four, Thursday and Saturday, it'll be really good there as well. That looked like a Vegas team that had been in tight playoff games before. They never, even down 1-0, even when they gave up the late Duclair goal to make it 2-2 going into the third period, it just looked like a Vegas team that was comfortable playing in a playoff brand of hockey in game one of the Stanley Cup Finals. And not to say Florida is uncomfortable, because Florida came back from down 3-1 against the greatest regular season team of all time, and they made quick work of the Maple Leafs and Hurricanes, and they've won a lot of overtime and close games themselves. So it's not to say Florida isn't comfortable in these games, just game one of the Cup Final looked like a Vegas team that had been there before and had been in these types of situations before, and they played like it, and they just had that extra level going into the third period and were able to come away with a game one victory.
Yeah, and curious now what sort of response you see from the Florida Panthers. And I say that in the sense that you mentioned down 3-1 against the Boston Bruins in the opening round, come back to steal that series from the President's Trophy winners. But since then, yes, they've played overtime games, but since then, there haven't been a lot of nervous moments for the Florida Panthers, all right? They built an early lead in their series against the Toronto Maple Leafs, kind of cruised that one to the finish line. They build an early lead, win back-to-back overtime games in Carolina, cruise that one to the finish line. And I'm certainly not suggesting that they got to this point without facing any sort of adversity. In games, there's been plenty. But this is a team that is in, I guess, territory that they haven't been in since the opening round. And suddenly they're looking at the team that, instead of going home 2-0, is scrambling for a split. And I'm just curious to see what the sort of response is from them tonight. Because as you said, for a lot of reasons, the way they're built, the way they're coached, just the way they play in general, this Vegas team is really comfortable in this spot. They have a lot of experience on deep playoff runs, etc. I'm curious what we see from the Panthers tonight.
It's funny because immediately after they won game one, you started seeing on social media the "I hate Vegas" and
I can't wait to have this chat.
I'm very curious as to where you stand on it because everyone's upset. Not everyone, but there are lots of people upset about Vegas again, about how they were gifted a hockey team and how, you know, their fans don't know anything about struggle and all this, all these types of narratives about how the Vegas Golden Knights shouldn't be where they are and it's not fair that they are where they are, so on and so forth. And I don't quite understand the dislike for Vegas. Like, I fully understand if you're a fan in the Pacific Division cheering against them because they're a rival. You know, the Flames have won all of one time at T-Mobile Arena in Vegas, and it took them forever to get that first win.
Right.
Thank goodness it happened this season and didn't turn into the new Anaheim. But I understand that I guess they had more favorable expansion rules than San Jose did 20 years ago or 30 years ago,
yeah.
or Minnesota and Columbus did 20 years ago. I understand that the expansion
slightly
rules,
better rank than the Cow Palace too, but
yeah, I never got to see that.
No, me
spot.
Neither.
A little bit better than some of the other, like when Carolina first started, they weren't expansion, but they were playing in Greensboro,
right?
Not a very nice place apparently, but like, I get it that expansion conditions for Vegas and Seattle were made it easier for them to be competitive earlier. I get that. And I also understand that that can be a little bit frustrating if you're a long time, like lifelong fan of the Minnesota Wild. Sure. I guess that can be a little frustrating. Although wasn't Minnesota in a Western Conference final like 2 or 3 years into their existence? Anyway, I guess my point is that it's not really their fault that they, it's not like they didn't force Florida into giving them Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault because they wanted to keep Alex Petrovic. They didn't force Dale Tallon to have poor talent evaluation. They didn't force Columbus to give up on William Karlsson and have him turn into a bona fide top six player in this league. They didn't force Chandler Stephenson for a fifth round pick, or it's not like they forced the hands to claim Amadio off of waivers. Hell, the guy that we're going to talk to Justin Cardinal about, they got Aiden Hill for a fourth round pick. That was just this past summer.
Right.
Like, it's not like they forced these teams into, they don't have pictures. They don't have blackmail on these teams. What they have is an owner who cares only about winning and will spend whatever he needs to spend to fire coaches and make changes and buy out players and pay people not to be there. They have an owner in Bill Foley who only wants to win. They have a hockey ops staff with George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon who have that mandate and have been ruthless in trying to win. But also, that trade for Mark Stone, that's a straight up W. And the Jack Eichel trade, I know that there was a lot of, well, they'll never win with Jack Eichel. Jack Eichel's 3 wins away from maybe being the Conn Smythe winner. He's been that good in the postseason.
Absolutely.
And it's not like you look at either of those trades and say, oh boy, Vegas, they overpaid for those guys. No, they've already won the Mark Stone trade, and they're en route to winning the Jack Eichel trade. I just mentioned all those guys they got for a song. I just mentioned their work in expansion. I don't know. They've got smart management. They've got an owner who wants to win. I just don't, I understand disliking them because they're good. I just don't understand the frustration from like people out east are saying this team was good. This isn't fair. They don't deserve to be where they are. I would suggest they absolutely deserve to be where they are because they have made the most of their situation better than 95% of the rest of the NHL has.
Well, and here's what makes me laugh, and I'll echo your thoughts in just a second, but the people you don't see on your social media feed screaming about how much they hate the Golden Knights because of the expansion rules or something like that, those people are claiming that the Golden Knights are some sort of underdog story, which also couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, if you want to say the underdog finished atop the Western Conference standings,
no,
with
I wouldn't
111 points.
Either.
So
they were an underdog 6 years ago or 5 years ago in the Cup final,
right,
for sure.
And personally, I thought, and maybe I'm being proven wrong here, but I thought they were kind of likable for that reason. This was a bunch of guys that, yes, was the scrap heap operated a little differently than in past expansion drafts? Yes, it was. But we didn't go through the list when the Vegas Golden Knights were about to be put together and think to ourselves, oh man, they're going to be so good. And if you're listening right now saying, I predicted that they were going to be this good, I call BS, because nobody looked at those lists of guys exposed and thought, this team is going to be a juggernaut. This team is going to be a contender from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so kudos to them. They took advantage of not necessarily the rules as much as taking advantage of the rest of the general managers in the league overthinking the fact that they were going to lose a player, trying to work their way around, well, how do we sort of make this system work better for us? And a bunch of guys, and when I say guys, I mean other general managers, yeah, made mistakes. And the Golden Knights have taken advantage of it. But to your point on the Stone trade and the Eichel trade and the Stevenson addition and a bunch of other things that they've done, this is not the team anymore that was built through the expansion draft either.
It's not.
Give them a ton of credit.
And you know what? I get it that they have taken advantage of LTIR rules, and that's not cheating. It's the same thing I said about Tampa Bay when Nikita Kucherov was wearing that shirt and the like. They right. didn't cheat. You can say it's cheating all you want, but it's 100% within the rules. Just because your team doesn't do it doesn't mean that Vegas or Tampa Bay or other teams who take advantage of LTIR are doing it wrong. Nobody had a problem when Chicago did it, when Patrick Kane came back in the playoffs, and I think that was their last Stanley Cup, when Patrick Kane came back in game one against Nashville after missing so much time with a collarbone. They did the exact same thing that Kucherov did a couple years ago when he was kept out and then came back. They've done nothing wrong, and I think they just have taken advantage of their situation better than most other teams have in the NHL. And you can be frustrated at your own team for not taking advantage of it as well as Vegas has. And look, I get it that they've got the benefit of having no state tax and being in Las Vegas, and they've got some good things going for them, which makes it annoying. I just don't think, my main point is, they've done nothing wrong. And they are three wins away from a Stanley Cup in one of the greatest nothing to riches story.
Right.
It's not even rags to riches. They went from nothing. They didn't exist to they've been to two Stanley Cup finals in 6 years.
I didn't realize how much the sort of golden misfits had gone from beloved underdogs. And I say underdogs in the sense of how they were formed to this team that everyone despised. Maybe I was sleeping on that. I don't understand the hate for the Vegas Golden Knights. I just don't think they're an underdog.
I don't think they are either. But is that, who's actually painting it that way?
I see a lot of that on the old Twitter.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I do not think they're an underdog either.
No, they won the Western Conference.
They spend to the cap. They are not an underdog. They spend over the cap.
Yeah. I mean, if that's an underdog story, then we got a lot of underdogs.
A few texts, 960-960. This says, the dislike stems from the mercenary nature with which they go about their business. No win one for the Gipper in Vegas, and I hate Tampa as well. This says, regarding Vegas, being 10-plus million over the cap helps in being a team easy to hate. This says, since they're in the division, I'd rather they win so they can settle down with the spending for a year or two. This says, Well, the Knights are like $10 million over the cap and about to win a cup, so I guess that's worth being upset by. And this says, Pat, they're hated because of borderline cheating and the way they treat their players. More text, 960-960, as we continue along on this Monday edition of Sportsnet Today. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you. Going to keep the conversation going about the Vegas Golden Knights right now, specifically about goaltender Aiden Hill. I throw it to you, Mr. Gilbertson.
Thank you, sir. We are joined and really happy to have this guest on the line. We're joined by Justin Cardinal, who is the co-founder and head of development for Calgary-based Evolution Goaltending Corp. And that is a company that's worked with a few guys that you've certainly heard of, including one who is now starting for the Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Final, and that's Calgary-raised Aiden Hill. Justin, thanks for doing this. How are you today?
I am great. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we're so happy to have you. I'm going to start with, we'll get into the intricacies of goaltending in a second, but let's just start because you're joining us not just from anywhere. You are joining us from Vegas, where you attended game one, where you'll be attending game two tonight. Why don't we just start there? What was it like to be in the building, T-Mobile Arena, on Saturday night for game one of the Cup?
It was unbelievable. The atmosphere in that building, watching what Aiden was able to do during that game, it was unbelievable. It was a surreal feeling. I'm still not really processing that this is actually happening in the Stanley Cup Finals. It's unbelievable.
Let me just paint a little bit of the background so people know. So you, I believe you said Aiden Hill was about 10 years old when you gave him his first lesson with you, just sort of cold called by his dad. Hey, I'd like to set up a lesson. And now we're talking about a guy that you work with in the summer, that you text with every game. I know you said it was surreal. You're having trouble wrapping your head around it, but what is it like? What's it like to see someone that you've been working with that long, this close to, I'm sure, what was a childhood dream of his?
That's exactly right. He's living the dream right now. This is what we dream about. The coolest part about all of it is seeing him as a 10-year-old kid and knowing that this was his dream, and now him living it. And not only living it, but in the biggest stage in the world. And people talk to me all the time, and they ask me about nerves, and they're asking me, am I nervous? I've got nothing to be nervous about. This kid is prepared for this. This is what we prepare for. There are kids that, right now, when I was a kid playing road hockey out at home, I remember pretending to be Mike Richter and Martin Brodeur and Patrick Waugh. Right now, there's people in their backyards playing road hockey, and they're pretending to be Aiden Hill. It's unbelievable.
That's a very good way to put it, and a very cool reminder. Let's go back to game three. You talked about the fact that he was prepared for this. So let's go back to game three of that Pacific Division final between the Golden Knights and the Edmonton Oilers. Laurent Brossoit obviously has been starting for Vegas. He goes down with an injury, and suddenly Aiden is getting loose on the bench, is going into the game. What's going through your mind at that moment?
Honestly, as soon as I saw his face and I saw him stand up to start to get ready, there was, again, I can see it in his eyes. He was ready for this. This is a moment that we prepare for and we wait for. And as soon as that opportunity comes, you got to be ready for it. And I saw the look on his face. I saw as soon as he got on the ice, he had some routines and some things that he does. And as soon as I saw him get to the net and he was shaking his elbows off, I knew right away he was comfortable. He was ready to go. And the biggest message from us is enjoy this. This isn't something that happens every single year. You need to enjoy every single moment because these are the things that we prepare for. And if we don't enjoy it, it passes us by really quickly. So enjoy every moment, take it all in, and again, enjoy the process.
Beyond just that preparation you talk about, you know, when we look at Aiden's skill set as a goaltender, as a guy who was ready to, you know, because there's a lot of teams that, you know, suddenly the backup goes in and people think, oh, geez, they're maybe in trouble here. And obviously the Golden Knights have had more than just the two goalies go through this season. But when you look at Aiden and how he's built, whether it's mental mindset, whether it's physical skill set, what's put him in a position to really capitalize on this opportunity?
Again, I believe that he's prepared for everything. And when I say that, it's mentally, it's physically. He's connected both. He's been able to work through situations that haven't really gone his way and gotten positives out of it, whether that be the old teams that he played for in the NHL or his junior career, how all those things happened. The adversity that he's been through coming all the way up through this has built him, has built his character, and he's more prepared for this than anything in his life. I think the thing that's the harder for him right now is dealing with some of the media, because you don't ever really get to practice that stuff. So the technical work and the work that we do mentally throughout, he's more than ready for this, and it's just a matter of how he's connecting all the dots at the right time.
I know you don't want to, you know, bug him too often, but what are you saying to him when you get those moments with him? What are your reminders to him at this point?
My biggest reminders are right now, if it's nothing technically or tactically, if for instance, when they were playing Edmonton, I saw some things on their power play that they were looking to try to execute. So give him a little heads up and a reminder, and then he responds to me with the right answer. So I know exactly how he's going to handle the tactical situation. He's more than prepared for that. But again, the biggest thing is understanding where you are. And this is a moment in your life. This is a moment in time that nobody can take away from you. So enjoy every bit of it. And as he does, you can see that game against Edmonton where they score the first two shots on net. As soon as I saw that grin on his face after the second goal, I knew it was over. It was he wasn't letting anything else in. He was prepared for this, and he just calmed himself down and then closed the door the rest of the way.
It's that little smirk, hey? That's the giveaway?
Yep. Oh, yeah. He's loving every moment of this, every single moment. All the stuff at the net, all the little punches and the little whacks and stuff, that fires him up. That fuels him. He loves competition. He's always been a very, very strong competitor. Even when we're playing rebound at the end of a session for fun, we don't win. He doesn't let us win. he's a very, very competitive guy.
I have these moments as a writer where, you know, and maybe even going back to when Mika Kiprusoff was the starting goalie for the Flames, where you see a save and you're sitting there at your laptop and you're like, geez, how the heck am I going to describe what just happened there? I'm going to throw this one over to you. How would you describe that stick save that the entire hockey world is talking about?
Again, very, very, very good play by the Florida Panthers to add it goes east-west, and the guy goes back to the middle. And again, the competitive nature of Aiden and the amount of times he's been in situations where he's had to battle and compete. Everybody talks about how he threw all technique out the door. Oh, no, there was no way he could have rotated to push to that puck again. Puck's behind him, so the best way to do is to build coverage, and he ended up falling back. It is a technical battle save, and he's made it many times before. It just so happens that this is on the biggest stage in the world, and he just got enough of it to keep it out. Those are saves and moments that can change series, that can change games, and that's what's expected of us. That's the job that we signed up for.
We are chatting here on Sportsnet today with Justin Cardinal, co-founder and head of development for Calgary-based Evolution Goaltending Corp. And goaltending coach for more than one goalie you've heard of. We've talked a lot about Aiden Hill, but let me ask you about Logan Thompson. He's another goalie raised here in Calgary. You've worked with him. A different scenario for Logan. He gets hurt late in the regular season in a game at the Saddle Dome. Actually, he ends up kind of being, I guess, the odd man out, you could say, in these Stanley Cup playoffs, still along for the ride with the Vegas Golden Knights. What have been your conversations with Logan in terms of how he approaches his current scenario?
Well, obviously coming off an injury, and he had an outstanding season, named an all-star, goes to the all-star game. He's had an outstanding season as well. The biggest thing for him right now is understanding the injury and how that takes him out of the lineup. And then just, again, it's a matter of being prepared. Anything can happen right now. They still might need to use him. Who knows what happens throughout this long, grueling series. So the whole thing is just a matter of shutting off the noise, forgetting about what people are saying, how things have transpired throughout. Prepare yourself. If he can prepare himself, and an opportunity is needed for him to step in, be ready for that opportunity.
Goalies love their numbers. What do you figure the odds are of one goaltending company sending two guys to the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, it's pretty special. Again, when Vegas traded for Aiden this year, in the offseason, I'm not going to lie, it felt surreal again, where there's two of them from the same town who have trained with us for a very long time. I cannot be more happy for these guys. This is truly living the dream. They get to not only play in the NHL, but they get to play on the same team, and they know each other. It doesn't get better than that.
What do you hope this shows, or what do you hope this means to young goalies, maybe wannabe goalies? You know, there's tons of kids in Calgary and elsewhere who, you know, are maybe bugging mom and dad, hey, let's get some pads. I'd like to try goalie next year. You know, maybe I'll try goalie on the driveway. understanding how challenging it is to get to the next level and the level after that and on and on. When you look at Aiden and Logan as maybe role models for those kids, what should they be learning from them?
Well, that's the biggest thing. It's hard. It's hard to play in the NHL. It's hard to be a professional athlete. But at the same time, the thing that people need to know is it's possible. You're going to have way more people that tell you no than tell you yes. So what we actually do as goaltending coaches and as a goaltending company is we truly build belief systems. There's the technical side and the all of the sides of what to do, how to do it. But at the same time, we're building belief systems, and we're building belief systems in them. They're believing in themselves. And that's the thing that I, again, in terms of pointing out, is it's not really about me. It's about them. They're the ones that are on the big stage. They're the ones that are playing in front of 20,000 people. They're the ones who have to deal with the media or all the things that happen where if you had a bad game, who's going to chew you out and why not? They're the ones who have to deal with that. We're there for support, but at the end of the day, it's about them. It's about them and their preparation, them being able to seize the moment and be ready for again, playing on the biggest stage in the world.
I'm so glad you mentioned that part. Is there something that's happened, and there's lots of examples, you know, we talked about Aiden getting thrown in cold, giving up goals on the first two shots in that clinching game against Edmonton. We talk about Logan and the injury issues. Has there been one situation that really makes you proud this spring where you're like, hey, you know, everything we've done has really prepared that guy for this?
You know, I don't want to say there's one moment, just simple due to the fact of Logan not being in the lineup right now. But the moments that were is when I watched the consistency of both of them throughout the entire season. If you look at the numbers, the one thing that a lot of people are talking about and saying, like with Aiden, the narrative of Aiden being the fourth guy, he was never the fourth guy. He was injured for a little while. He was the second guy or 1A, 1B. They played Logan played the brunt of the games, which was expected, and he had a great all-star year. But Aiden has always been very, very solid. He came from Arizona, went to San Jose, and now he's in Vegas. And if you look at his past, he's always been very, very consistent. So to see the consistency that both of those guys put together throughout an entire season and now into playoffs, the whole year has been it's been a super fun ride for us. I haven't missed a single game of Vegas Golden Knights this year. I watch every single game, and I'm so proud of those guys. There's no amount of money that could take the smile off my face right now.
Do you have your little guy in Vegas with you?
Absolutely. I have the whole family here.
Well, it's going to be another special night down there, Justin. I'm so thankful for you taking time to join us again. Justin Cardinal, co-founder, head of development for Evolution Goaltending Corp, a local company that has helped prepare more than one guy for the very biggest stage. So, Justin, enjoy game two tonight, and thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
There you go. That's cool chat. And first of all, big round of applause. That's a big step in Wes Gilbertson's radio career. That's the I just smooth right to Wes. Those in segment interviews are not easy to do. Like a pro.
Justin's the pro. That was good. Very fascinating stuff. You know, we always say we don't know anything about goaltending. It is absolute voodoo for the rest of us in the world. So to have someone, and what I love about it is you can hear the excitement in his voice when he talks about Aiden, when he talks about Logan, when he talks about what both of them have accomplished on the NHL stage. I just think it's so cool.
Justin Cardinal from Evolution Goaltending Corp here in Calgary. And yeah, it's a really neat story. Logan Thompson, the Calgary product. There's Aiden Hill, who is not born in Calgary, but a lot of his minor hockey in this city, a Blackfoot minor hockey product, played a year with the Calgary Canucks. And the Vegas Golden Knights, if they were this far, had a pretty good chance of having a Calgary goaltender between the pipes. Either Logan Thompson, who unfortunately got hurt in that game in Calgary. Did they end up? Yeah, Jonathan Quick ended up shutting the door
right in
that game, and they won a one-goal game, if I remember correctly. And now Aiden Hill, who wasn't really, like, he was on the radar, but, you know, when Logan Thompson was in net, it was Thompson and Quick, and Brassois and Hill were hurt, and you're like, we don't know when they're going to come back. Then they start the playoffs, and Brassois the goalie against the Jets. And then it's been just a bizarre year between the pipes for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Maybe I'm biased, you know, because I've written about them. You can find something on the Post Media sites. We obviously just finished chatting about them. But is Aiden Hill not the best story of these playoffs?
Oh, yeah. It's one, like, I think that there are, you know, outside of this market, I think Chuck's a pretty good story.
Sure.
Bobrovsky reclaiming his form.
And maybe
Hill is this kind of out of nowhere story. I absolutely think so.
The best breakout story would be a great way to put it, right? This is a guy, listen, he's played 100 regular season games roughly in the NHL. He's not an unknown, and yet this is the, you know, this is when Aiden Hill makes a name for himself.
Yeah.
This has been breakout spring for Aiden Hill, and it's been pretty cool to watch.
Absolutely. That was a cool interview. Justin Cardinal of Evolution Goaltending Corporation joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Using the same secret recipe since 1975, dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Takeout or delivery at 403-248-3344.
Back to Sportsnet today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pat and Wes on this Monday. We had lots of news at the annual State of the League Saturday before Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final, which was won by the Vegas Golden Knights. Aiden Hill and the Vegas Golden Knights. Just had Justin Cardinal on from Evolution Goaltending here in Calgary. A really fun conversation about Hill and how he's been able to capture the number one role in a really, really strange circumstance. And here the Vegas Golden Knights are 3 wins away from a Stanley Cup. Now, they still have a very resilient Florida Panthers team to tangle with, a Panthers team that has been very good in the face of adversity. Now, they haven't faced really any adversity since round one, but I'm not ready to count the Panthers out just because they lost game one. I loved Paul Maurice post-game on Saturday where he's like, okay, it's one game. It might have been an expletive in there, but it's one game. Like, ease up a little bit on the concern.
I and a whole bunch of other people have been guilty of counting the Panthers out already in these Stanley Cup playoffs. 3-1 against Boston. That just looked like see you later. And so down 1-0. Let's not count anybody out just yet.
Agreed. So Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, the commissioner and deputy commissioner, respectively, of the NHL, spoke Saturday before Game 1. Want to react to some of what we heard. First of all, there was news on the independent investigation on the 2018 Team Canada World Junior team. Apparently, according to Bill Daly, should have the results of that later this summer. Stan Bowman, Joel Quenneville, Logan Mailloux will all have reinstatement conversations after the Stanley Cup final. We'll see where that goes. I don't know if necessarily you need... I'm not pounding my fist on any one of them to be reinstated, but we'll see what the NHL does. And then this one. Bill Daly and Gary Bettman responded to a question about player safety. They were asked about George Parros and the job that he's doing as the director of player safety. And not a lot of people were very happy with the... I don't know what you would be expecting. I don't know if you'd be expecting the commissioner and deputy commissioner to throw one of their employees right under the bus. And funny enough, they didn't do just that.
I think George has done a terrific job. I think everybody's... All of our clubs are satisfied with the job he does. He applies the rules consistently, uses past precedent, and has made our game safer.
And frankly, if anybody understands the elements of the game you're referring to, I think George does. I think he has a real feel for the game, and I echo Bill's sentiment that he's done a really good job. When you make decisions in this context, nobody's happy. The team that has somebody who they feel was victimized always wants more punishment, and the team that has the player who's being accused of an inappropriate act says it never happened. So, you know, and there tends to be some rooting, understandably, from the view that people have. But at the end of the day, I think the Department of Player Safety does a terrific job.
A game on the ice has never been safer.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's Bill Daly and Gary Bettman. They were lambasted on social media for that response. And I'll be perfectly honest. I do not think that the Department of Player Safety has done a very strong job. And the reason I say that is because I don't know what, like, there's nothing even close to a standard as to what you're going to get on any given potential supplemental discipline decision.
The part about applying the rules consistently, I'm sure there were a lot of eyebrows arched awfully high at that part, because you're absolutely right. Now, I would echo what Gary Bettman said in the terms of no one's ever going to be totally happy with this. You've got two sides. You know, one side wants the rule book thrown at a guy. The other side wants his suspension or fine or whatever it is to be as insignificant as possible. So I understand the challenge of the job, but yes, we heard what you would expect to hear from Gary Bettman and Bill Daly. I'm just not surprised that the blowback has been as strong as it has been.
Look, who has run Department of Player Safety over the years?
Well, wasn't that the best line in Brad Treliving's press conference in Toronto? At least my favorite, about how Rafi Torres brought him and Brendan Shanahan together. They used to spend a whole lot of time together.
That's right. Because he was in Arizona when Rafi was doing his thing.
That was maybe not the best line, because the 75-year-old Giordano line was pretty good. But the, you know, under low-key humor, I really liked that one.
What, like, I'm trying to, now I don't remember. Who started the videos? Remember when we first started getting the videos?
Right.
Now I don't remember who it was. But Patrick Burke was in charge of it for a little while. There's a former player who was in charge of it, and now I can't remember who it was. Anyway,
didn't Patrick Burke work with Peros though?
Maybe he did.
Yeah.
All I know is that it feels like the NHL's disciplinary department, now called the Department of Player Safety, it feels more inconsistent than it's ever been. I know less now what is deemed to be a suspension. I know less now going into a situation what they're going to do than I did, say, 7 or 8 years ago. So if that means they're doing a good job, then I guess they're doing a good job. And I don't necessarily think that they are. It was Shanahan. That's right. It was Shanahan who started doing the videos. Thank you, text line at 960-960. Brendan Shanahan was the first one who started doing the detailed videos of this is charging. And it's like, okay, these are helpful. But they, even doing the videos now, you can slant a video to how you want it to be. It's like, this is not charging. Well, but the last one, like, anyway, is it consistent? No. Do I think it's doing a great job? No. Did I expect Gary Bettman to say that they're doing a good, bad job? No. So nothing surprised me at that.
I would just add that I think it's time to do away with this idea that playoff games are worth more in the sense of suspensions than regular season games. If something's a 4-game suspension in the regular season, make it a 4-game suspension in the playoffs.
That sounds like something that is logical, which means they will disagree.
I made my case.
What about the Arizona Coyotes? Commissioner Bettman, why are you fighting so tooth and nail for this market? Why is the city of Phoenix, why is the Phoenix metro area so important? Why are you willing to lay your reputation on the line for the Coyotes?
It's a terrific market. There are a lot of sports fans there. It's a growing market. It's one of the larger markets in North America. And I think the club, and by implication its fans, have been in situations that have been unfortunate, and maybe they've been a little bit of a victim of circumstance. And so if we can make something work, we're at the stage now where the league, ownership, our teams are strong. We're in a better position to resist moving than maybe we were 20 or 30 years ago. And we want to make sure we explore all options at this stage of where we are before we would consider having to relocate a club. And I'm hopeful we won't have to.
I know that you love the area.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great area. It is not a hockey market. I don't care what anybody says anymore. Well, if you move it to Tempe, well, that's not going to happen, by the way, because apparently the city had no interest in it. But if you move it to Tempe, well, it'll sell out every night. All the Canadians down there, all the New Yorkers, and it'll sell. People from Chicago, they'll sell out every game. Well, the city of Tempe didn't want the arena. Well, if it, move it back into downtown Phoenix. That didn't work before. They had to move it to Glendale. Well, we'll move it to Glendale. People look. It's not going to work. Like, just
the Big Valley, though. There's a bunch more municipalities.
There are.
Haven't tried Mesa. Haven't been to Gilbert.
Seems like, you know, the
can't afford land in Scottsdale.
It feels like Gary is just absolutely dialed on the sunk cost fallacy here. Like, we've invested this much already. We got to keep putting money into this to make sure it works. It's sometimes better to just, you've only got a few chips left, but you don't need to buy back in. You do not always need to rebuy. You can pull your chips out and just walk away from the table and go play roulette. And if roulette is Quebec City or Kansas City or Houston or Utah or wherever, it's not going to work there. Move on.
It's not as simple as A or B, but I'd just love to know what irks you more. The idea of staying in Arizona and trying again without a building, or going back to Atlanta for a third crack.
I don't get that one either. Let's move from Arizona to potentially Atlanta and expansion, because Bill Daly, who you'll hear first, and then Gary Bettman, were asked about expansion on Saturday.
I think we've been consistent in saying like that expansion's not on the top of our priority list. But, you know, the good news is that there are a lot of people who are interested in owning NHL franchises in a lot of different markets. I certainly don't think player pool or supply is a concern for us, or a dilution of the product. I think there's a lot of good hockey players due to the efforts of everybody in terms of developing hockey players. So obviously what our owners look at when they look at expansion is, does adding a club add to the value, the overall value of the league? That is their equation, and that's the equation we'll apply going forward.
I agree with what Bill said, but we've always, my quotes over the years are, you look at market, you look at ownership, you look at arena, and you look at, does it make the league stronger? And I think it's fair to say that the last two expansions, Vegas and Seattle, have made the league stronger.
Okay, so they don't need more than 32. I'm very, very adamant about that. They don't need to try Atlanta again, although it sounds like they're interested in it. Swing and a miss, and swing and a miss again. Like, two Canadian teams have franchises because Atlanta failed twice. So maybe if Quebec City wants a franchise, they need to go to Atlanta again, because when it inevitably fails a third time, maybe then they'll move it to Quebec City in a decade. I don't understand. Like, I understand relocating because Arizona needs to move, and I understand that there are monetary reasons to go after expansion.
Like 1 billion of them?
Yeah, like a billion or so of
1
them.
1 billion?
But how many of the other more successful is the wrong word, but I guess more successful or larger, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and obviously the NFL all do significantly more revenue than the NHL does. How many of them have more than 32 teams? The answer is none.
None.
Nobody has more than 32, and the NHL is thinking about doing 33 or 34. And I know they said that expansion's not on the radar for us, except that it is, because Kevin Weeks and John Buccigross and Elliot Friedman and all kinds of people in the know of this type of stuff are talking about Atlanta and Houston and Kansas City and Salt Lake City. So obviously, expansion is on the radar.
This is way off topic, but it's on my mind now. What was the league that rolled out expansion up to like 40-some teams a while? It was a minor league. Do you remember this? Jumped from like 10 teams to...
Is that the ABA?
It may have been.
I know the ABA at one time had like 45 teams.
Yeah.
Some teams were playing 12 games. Some teams were playing 50 games. Like, what league is this?
I digress. The 32 is a really good number, and I understand the appeal in expansion in the sense of, listen, the Ottawa Senators are about to sell for $1 billion, or that's what we keep hearing. So the value of an expansion team has even skyrocketed from the astronomical number that it was for Vegas and Seattle to get in the league. And the other thing that makes it so appealing is credit to the NHL. These last two expansion teams have been smash successes. Vegas and Seattle have become very strong markets. They've become must-see places in terms of where I would recommend you go watch a hockey game. It's worked. But if you go above 32, you're either looking at less than half your teams making the playoffs or a radical departure from how you've been doing your playoff structure for years and years and years. And for me personally, and I'm not the one who would get a cut of the $1 billion, I don't love either option. I don't love an expanded playoff format, and I don't love more than half your teams not getting in.
And I'm just trying to think. I know that the allure of an extra $1 billion into HRR is very hard to hockey related revenue is really hard to, you know, sneeze at.
Sure.
Of course they're going to be interesting, but maybe figure like relocate Arizona first, let another league,
not to Atlanta.
Do not do Atlanta and let another league go beyond 32 before you do it. Because you need, I don't feel like the talent pool has been watered down as much as others do with the admission of Vegas and Seattle. I don't feel like the product or the quality in my eyes has taken a hit since 2018 and since 2021 when those two teams entered the league.
I agree.
But I do worry if you go 33 or 34, that you're starting to stretch it a little bit. Like, how many quad A guys do you need to then promote to full-time NHLers? And look, quad A players are incredible athletes and the best hockey players amongst the best hockey players on the planet. But the NHL is still supposed to be the elite of the elite of the elite. I don't know. PA would love it, would open up 65 more jobs or whatever it is. That's horrible math. Would open up 45 more jobs or whatever it is. And obviously everybody would love it because of the money that it would bring in, but no, I don't think they need expansion. They don't even have 32 healthy franchises right now. Why make it 33 or 34?
Yeah, absolutely. You need to find a solution for Arizona. And I was among those who thought the sort of specter that the potential of that facility in Tempe and the whole development they were talking, I think that could have made the Arizona Coyotes a long-term fit. I really think that home made sense. You could have potentially tapped into a market or an area of the valley that doesn't have a team to call its own beyond the ASU sport, you know, college,
yeah,
which they support the bleep out of it, and rightly so, but it's not working. You've taken a bunch of cracks, so yes, you need to find the solution to Arizona before you start dangling a 33rd team out there just to cash in.
It's Pat and Wes wrapping up Sportsnet Today, this hour of Sportsnet Today. Speaking of Sportsnet Today, we will be on location coming up this Saturday, June 10th at Trail Appliances. So join us live at Trail Appliances, 6880 11th Street Southeast. Just, I guess, that would be north of Deerfoot Meadows. So just north of Deerfoot Meadows in the Southeast. We'll be live from 11 till 1 o'clock on Saturday, June 10th. And we are grilling with the Flames alumni at Trail Appliances. So all kinds of alumni will be down there, meet and greet with former Flames. We've got a pay-by-donation barbecue lunch with proceeds going to Brown Bagging for Calgary Kids, an awesome initiative that makes sure that kids in schools have lunches every single day. The chance to win a brand-new barbecue valued at $2,200. It'll be Logo and I broadcasting from Trail Appliances on Saturday. Trail Appliances is family-owned and operated for 48 years with barbecues in stock, including Napoleon. Join us Saturday live from 11 till 1 o'clock or catch us after the fact on the podcast. For more details, visit sportsnet.ca/960. One more time, sportsnet.ca/960. Flames talk up next. Got a juicy trade target, potential trade target, realistic trade target. We'll find out next. Flames Talk kicks off next, leading you into Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. It's Pat and Wes, and Flames Talk's around the corner on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.